There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, and there you have it.
There you go.
With the qualifying.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Steve Faub, my co-host. This is podcast number 1095, May 19th, 2025. Steven.
This F1 Weekly Podcast is brought to you by Yahoo Ads. Yahoo Ads provide you, the F1Weekly.com web surfer, with ads that interest you. From tickets to the Canadian Grand Prix to ringtones for your cell phone, Yahoo Ads get you the stuff you really want. Click on them. You know you want to.
Thank you, Steve, and thank you, Yahoo Ads. On today's program, Max beats Piastri in Turn 1 and dominates at Imola for Red Bull's 400th Grand Prix. No team orders at McLaren. Ferrari show good race pace and bring some joy to the Tifosi with P4 and P6. Albon lucks out with P5. And Aston Martin had fake speed in qualifying. And on today's program, more classic Nasser Hamid with some classic interviews this week. We have Ralf Schumacher, Alex Gurney, and one of my favorites, Milka Duno. And yes, we do need your contributions to keep this program on the air. Just click on the Support F1 Weekly tab. You know, you'll want to. Well, there you have it. FP1, FP2, Red Bull looked mid-pack, and then they just tweak it. Tsunoda had the big accident at the beginning of Q1, bringing out the red flag. But Max digs down deep, misses pole, but this time he was for sure going to beat Piastri at the start. And his determination was unstoppable, because that was fantastic in Turn 1. But quickly, just to summarize, Tsunoda's huge crash was pretty frightening. You know, it leaves that strange feeling in your gut. That was just hard to watch. And Colapinto does what he was supposed to do and crashes in quali as well. But the big surprise, of course, was Aston Martin. Out of the blue, they put the medium tires on and wind up in P5 and P8. And I'm just going, is the new wind tunnel kicking ass or what? So I was very happy for Fernando and Aston Martin. Lawrence Stroll was there congratulating the boys. But it was all for naught, because in the race, they were a complete disaster. But no, Max's determination this time, going on the outside around Piastri, and Piastri admitted he braked too early, where Max had broke late, and it was the key, because Max was gone pretty much for the entire race, besides having one virtual safety car and one real safety car when Behrman and Antonelli cars pooped out. But great Grand Prix. Everybody bitched about overtaking. There was a lot of good overtaking. What happened to Pierre Gasly was sad, losing many positions because he was doing so good in practice and reasonably well in qualifying. But it was a good Grand Prix. So happy that Ferrari showed really fantastic pace, and the McLarens had pace, but for some reason, McLaren, they were just too conservative. P5 Piastri didn't have the pace he had in previous races. I don't know if it's the new Pirellis, the old Pirellis, but really McLaren, they're still going to be leading the championship, of course, but they need to be a little bit more aggressive, like Red Bull, and of course Red Bull celebrating their 400th Grand Prix. So was Sauber celebrating their 600th Grand Prix, Peter Sauber, in the paddock, which was nice to see. But I was really happy for Ferrari, getting some good passing done. LCH stuck behind Antonelli was a little annoying, but eventually he finally got through. The virtual safety car was the perfect moment for Max. So Max not only had the speed, but he had karma. So it was very, very impressive. His fourth win at Imola consecutively. So very impressive. They could be coming back. We have Monaco. Qualifying is crucial. So I'm sure Max is taking extra Flintstones vitamins. And really, Albon and Leclerc, in the end, it was no further action against Leclerc. He didn't have to give up the spot. But Fred Vasseur said they just didn't want to get that five-second penalty because that would have pushed him back three, four, maybe five places. So they lost a place being nice, being conservative. And Albon finishes P5, which is really, really good for Williams, getting all those good points. Remember the Logan Sargeant days? Yeah, those were so much fun. So it's nice to see Williams climbing up the ladder. Colapinto, after the big accident, he had to be conservative in this race, and he did. He didn't crash. He finished the race, and that was the best thing he could do, as Doohan was seen giggling and sneakering after the accident in quali. But really disappointing for Aston Martin. I mean, I think they finished 14th, 15th. It didn't really matter. Once again, no points for Fernando. And we're talking a lot of money is being spent at this team with the big changes coming in 2026. I really don't know if Adrian Newey is capable of flipping this team to dominate that quickly, but miracles do happen occasionally. But yeah, it was brutal for Ferrari in qualifying. Both Leclerc just, oh my God, it was embarrassing. They were just struggling for pace, where a few years ago, Ferrari was fast in qualifying and slow in the race. So things have changed, but I think the Pirellis have a lot to do with their problems. But this was a wonderful Grand Prix. I can't wait for Monaco. Once again, people complain and moan about Monaco, not enough passing, but now we have mandatory two pit stops. I really don't know how that's going to play out, but it's mandatory, so we'll see if it shakes things up a little bit. I seriously doubt it, but we will have crashing. We have rookies, we have Colapinto, we have Tsunoda, and I expect a little chaos in Monaco. But once again, Max digs down deep, and of course all the hoopla about him smashing the record at the Nürburgring in the Ferrari GT3 car by 2 seconds. I think he's what you call a phenomenon. Phenomenon. I also want to add that apparently Red Bull is using artificial intelligence in trying to, I believe, copy McLaren's efficient rear braking system that's managing the tires very, very well. So yes, now we have AI involved in, you know, maybe they just go and type it in at ChatGPT, but it's interesting. I can't wait to see because this could make the big difference. Because we know that all the teams are using AI now. And it could really even out the field if everybody starts asking AI to do what the other team is doing for them. I don't know. Should there be new rules? So, my thoughts, I think it should be real people, Adrian Newey, so on and so forth. But right now, they're free to use AI as they wish. And we shall see if this really is a game changer. That's just my tip of the week. So there you have it. Max is back on top for once. This is his second win of the season. I still think that McLaren has the upper hand. I think they just need to be a little bit more aggressive. And of course, we had no team orders, and that's going to change very, very soon. So there you have it. I enjoyed this race. So let's get to the interviews. Now, we've got some really old ones here. We're going all the way back to 2006 when Nasser used to let me do some of the interviewing at the beginning, and then he would jump in because he had just found F1 Weekly and he was still being loving and conservative with me, even though he was giving me the questions, of course, because he was the real deal and I was a poser. So the Milka Duno, Alex Gurney interviews are fantastic. And of course, Ralf Schumacher is in Barcelona. So enjoy these. It's more classic Nasser Hamid. And of course, I miss Nasser every day.
And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial and the Swami, Nasser Hamid.
Cowboy's work is never done.
Greetings and Austin Powers regards. Here we go again. Formula One comes back to America to try yet another venue, where Watkins Glen, Indianapolis Motor Speedway, and Sebring, names synonymous with motor racing, failed to sustain the U.S. Grand Prix, the Lone Star State gets another chance to lasso Formula Uno in the Union. No venue has been announced, and reports are a brand new purpose-built track will host the Hee-Haw Grand Prix. The Tex-Mex cowboy behind this get-out-of-Indy deal is Tavo Helmuth, who has been racing in some division of NASCAR after a brief foray in Europe. His papito was involved in promoting IndyCar races in Mexico City in the early 80s. I had no idea. Ken Anderson had family members south of the border. Formula One will succeed in America, and very well, I may add, if it is promoted for all the right reasons and, of course, by all the right people. First of all would be location, which is very cosmopolitan and is a place people would like to visit apart from being a Grand Prix venue. I have yet to meet a person, American or Martian, who went to the Long Beach F1 race and came back disappointed. L.A. and Beverly Hills were in the hood, and San Diego only 90 minutes away. A street race in Florida will make a lot of sense, especially in early part of the year. Escape the winter of Northeast and Europe for Florida Fresh F1. And there is no shortage of other major markets. An F1 race on the Seattle waterfront could be very exciting. Rain is always there, and if it gets Bill Gates' attention, sponsorship worries would be solved once and for all. Road America, without any changes and before Herman Tilke is served any Miller Lite by the locals, is a better venue than several F1 circuits currently in use. But I am sure there is more to the story than we know or are told. Perhaps in this climate of global financial meltdown, the fine folks in Austin have a surplus of $200 million
to build a track, and that in a city which does not have a professional football, baseball, or basketball team, to play host to sporting legends with names like Kovalainen and Karun, Glock and Grassi. I am sure the locals are thrilled. This deal and the players behind it look as sharp as Simon Gillette of Donington Ventures. Time will shave fact from fiction. Grand Prix or no Grand Prix in Austin, the Big E will walk away with a lot of Big M. Final analysis? Hang him high if the GP is not delivered. What say you, Mr. Rogers?
Well, I was stunned when I saw the headlines, to be honest with you. First, we were talking New York. A number of venues popped up in the state. But Texas, it was such a surprise, but I was also stunned that the governor, the mayor, the city comptroller made announcements.
No, that was, I believe, the state comptroller of Texas.
Oh, the comptroller of Texas. And some people think Texas is actually its own country.
That's where they advertise.
Exactly.
But I would like to ask these people who are behind this project to name two F1 drivers.
I don't care about that. I want to know where the money's coming from and where they're going to build it.
Yeah,
because
absolutely.
We know that Bernie's not going to sign a 10-year contract with anybody for nothing. So they obviously had to put up some kind of fat deposit. Otherwise, Bernie wouldn't have announced it on his website.
It's either that or they could have a bond measure in the county or the city of Austin.
Or even the state, for that
matter. The state to pay race taxes and pay for this track.
Right.
But that would take time, and I don't see how they could meet the 2012 deadline.
No, because they basically need money now if they're going to, because that track really needs to start before the end of the year if it's going to be ready for a 2012 season.
And I think that's the biggest problem in this whole scenario.
Well, for me, the Geiger counter to detect any chance of success of Formula One or any motorsports activity in this country is a gentleman by the name of Roger Penske. You have probably heard of him.
I've heard of him every once in a while. Rental trucks?
Yeah, exactly. He has only one goal and desire, and that is to win. Here is a man who made it to Formula One both as a driver and team owner. And one has to ask, why is he not getting involved in starting a Formula One team or promoting a race in the United States? Answer is blowing in the wind across the Texas prairie. The man is not only successful but also smart. Who can you convince in America to spend $200 million plus to promote an event which does not even get a 1% rating in TV audience? Talk about Nielsen Schmielsen. And that is the motorsport mantra of the week. And the way I look at the situation money-wise is this. Let's say a corporate sponsor for a major event like Formula One, you're talking about $25, $30 million. And Formula One management normally asks for a minimum 5-year contract, okay? So let's say you are a marketing guy for some, you're a whippersnapper fresh out of, Williams and Mary marketing department, if they have one. And you go to a company where you're working for a company, Pepsi, UPS, FedEx, whatever, and you say, let's just start with $10 million, okay? We're going to use this to promote a Formula One Grand Prix, one race. Somebody's going to say, hey, for $10 million, we can sign guys like LeBron James, Lady Gaga, Tiger Woods is available at a bargain basement price, Bill Cosby, Joe Montana, faces and names people will know right away. Mainstream Americana for whole season. How can you convince somebody to come up with this money for one event where there is no American participation? I don't, as much as I would like to see a Formula One race right here in Santa Clara, I don't think this is going to fly. And what will really piss me off if this again gives a black mark to F1 interest in America and millions of dollars go from taxpayers to a Formula One management. That's what's going to happen here. Okay, so now we go for some Turkish delight. Sunday's Turkish Grand Prix will be race number 800 for Scuderia Ferrari. The team has missed a few races since 1950. Notable among the missed events was the very first Grand Prix at Silverstone and the 1976 Austrian Grand Prix following Niki Lauda's near-fatal crash in the German Grand Prix at the old 14.2-mile-long classic Nürburgring. The inaugural Turkish Grand Prix in 2005 was won by rallying legend Kimi Raikkonen in a McLaren. In 2006, Felipe Massa became Pasha of Istanbul Circuit, winning in 2007 and 2008 also. He's the only repeat winner of this event. Last year, Jensen was on the button making a pass on Vettel to take the lead and win the race, his final win of early season domination. The Tilke design circuit runs anti-clockwise. It's pretty much like the same format as the Interlagos, and no wonder Felipe feels so much at home, and is located on the Asian side of Istanbul. And doner kebabs along the Bosphorus are very tasty, highly recommended, and based on personal experience. Would you like to go to Turkey someday, sir?
I'm ready to go.
Really?
Yeah.
Cool. Well, you know, Turkish Airlines has a nonstop flight from New York, Miami, and Chicago also. That's what I've taken a few times. MotoGP from Le Mans Bugatti circuit. Two in a row for Lorenzo, meaning all three races so far have been won by Yamaha, as Rossi won the season opener and was second last Sunday. Andrea Dovizioso was third and Nicky Hayden was the highest placed American fourth. Lorenzo from Mallorca leads the championship over Rossi by 9 points. And the silly season has already started in MotoGP. Looks like Casey Stoner is not happy at Ducati and may be heading towards Honda. So that will be quite a big move. And then there is also a talk that maybe Rossi might go to Ducati. So we'll see what happens.
I can see that happening, but Rossi's pretty happy at Yamaha.
But, you know, if he gets beaten by Lorenzo this year, who is extremely good and young whippersnapper, I think he will bail out. That's my thinking. But it looks like Casey Stoner is pretty much done deal going to Honda. Now we come to the Indy 500, Collie. Did you watch any of that?
Oh, I did. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Very exciting stuff. I watched when Elio got pole at 228 miles per hour.
Mm-hmm.
But very exciting. Of course, Danica not too happy and, of course, condemning her team, bad car, everything was bad. Nothing was her fault.
Yeah.
She's perfect.
Yeah. And talking of Danica Patrick, there is a big interview on Crash.com, written material. So if anybody wants to check it out, Crash.net. Okay, Milka Duno and Paul Tracy did not qualify. This was a real heartbreaker for me.
Well, maybe they have a cat fight later on.
Yeah, unconfirmed reports, and I repeat, these are unconfirmed, unsubstantiated reports, are saying that Milka was later seen at White Castle having cheeseburgers with Canadian bacon while Tracy was enjoying some Milka shake.
I don't believe a word of it.
Yeah, we may have to check with Christopher DeHardy.
Yes, he knows it all.
Yeah, he may have snapped.
Or maybe a couple of our indie sources could collaborate.
Exactly. Story. Okay, and now more industry news of your interest, especially the NASCAR Hall of Fame in Charlotte, NC, North Carolina, is now open for business and visitation. First inductees were Bill Franz Sr., the founder of NASCAR, and his son Bill Franz Jr. And you know, Clark, when I used to live overseas in Karachi, I used to write a lot of letters to a lot of racing people. And one of the letters I sent once was to Bill Franz Jr., and he was very kind to send me a reply, very detailed response. And so, you know, a lot of emotional things here for me. Anyhow, Richard Petty, Dale Earnhardt Sr., and Junior Johnson. And this is a mighty fine facility, and a visit is highly recommended by the F1 Weekly's F1 Snobs. Are we F1 Snobs or F1 Doorknobs?
You know what?
Are a snob, dude.
Did I recommend this?
Yes, you did.
Hall of Fame to everybody last week.
Beautiful architectural.
It's a beautiful facility. Great cars. You could see number 43 at least a dozen times.
Well, the other thing, too, is that if you're anything like me growing up in the States, NASCAR, really before NASCAR became what it is today, you know, we follow guys like Cale Yarborough, Richard Petty, and, you know, some of those guys, they were kind of the racing icons in America. And so it's about time they finally got a Hall of Fame. They've had Hall of Famers lying around for decades.
Yeah. You know, talking of Cale Yarborough, that's one gentleman I would very, very much like to sit down and have a chat with. I mean, I've always liked him when he was racing. So, you know. We'll see. See, you're rolling your eyes again. You are a F1 snob, but we won't hold that against you. Okay, now we come to famous last words. When I saw this, I said, no, This cannot be from... this has to be from Flavio. This is his line of, you know, expertise. But they are from the other Mr. 10%, her Willie Weber, and I quote, "It and you know the new people, the Texas Grand Prix people and Cypher Group and, you know, Enigma, Enigma F1 Racing of America, they should listen to this. It is easier to find a 50-year-old virgin than a sponsor for Formula One."
Now that's...
End of quote.
That's a good quote.
Oh, it's right on the money.
And because I know 50-year-old virgins left and right.
Yeah, actually, really? Probably a lot of it depends on what country you're trying to find that virgin in, too.
No, that's a very, very good one. I like that.
Yeah. Her Willy Weber has declared that.
Any news on Flavio's tax problems with his big ship?
Well, you know, it's like when you're rich and famous, somehow problems disappear. And my favorite story on this is, remember this guy, Eddie DiBartolo?
Oh, yes.
Who was
49ers.
Owner of San Francisco 49ers. This is when they were very big. Well, maybe at the tail end of their dynasty. San Mateo, which is not too far from San Francisco. Some news came out that he tried to squeeze some girl or did something to her, and she filed a, you know, sexual harassment case, and then she was going forward with it. And then all of a sudden, it disappeared like a fever in the night, as they say in the song. So you know what, I was once involved, somebody I knew who was suing the employer, we used to work together, and this thing dragged on and on, and the company said to him that, you know, you drop the lawsuit, and keep your job, bygones are bygone, and we, you know, reinstate your bonus and give you all the back pay, and, you know, let's move on. And he was like on this, you know, oh, I've gone. He asked for my opinion. I said, you know, just this petty, it was all a petty issue that they were arguing about. I said, just, you know, you got family and I'll accept it, move on. And he says to me, oh, I've gone too far to stop the lawsuit now. So when he got to his attorney, he says to him, well, if you want to drag on, it's going to drag on for another few months. You're already 2 months behind on your payments to me, so what do you want to do? I'm not doing anything till you pay me another $2,000. So the reality sank in. The bottom line is money talks.
Money does talk.
And there is a lot of money in America, so it screams. Now, whether it will scream in Austin or not, that time will tell.
Well, let's hope some of that money's in Texas.
Yeah. You know what? I would, I'll tell you, I was able to get in touch with Mr. Paris Mullins, who was the right-hand man for Mr. Chad Hurley, and I'm trying to get an interview with him. And he was kind enough to respond to me that he will contact me later this week and we'll try to set up something next week. And I'm going to talk to him, obviously, as an idea. You know, what this country needs is a... In the old days, there used to be a program called Driver to Europe in Australia, the far-flung areas, South Africa. They should have a program here where they take a young kid. Like, you know, they have this program called Racing Steps in UK. I don't know all the details, but what it is... Some serious rich people have gotten together, and there is no free lunch anywhere. So what they're doing, if you're very talented, they will sponsor you. And my understanding is that in return, they want you to, when you start making big bucks, repay some of that money or a small percentage of your earnings. And that goes into that program for future talented kids. I'm going to share this idea with this guy and see what he has to say.
But the good work, Nass. Another outstanding Motorsports Mundial with lots of editorializing.
Gracias.
Thank you very much. Let's take a quick break and come back with Ralph Schumacher after this brief message.
Hi, this is Mika Häkkinen, double Formula One world champion. All the best for the readers, F1 Weekly.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And of course, this is a big interview. This is the man himself, Nasser. Introduce this former Formula One driver.
Yes, sir. Ralph Schumacher raced in Formula One for over a decade. He made his debut in the 1997 Australian Grand Prix for Jordan. He spent the next six seasons at Williams, scoring six wins. The first in 2001 at Imola and the final at Manicur in 2003. His final three seasons in F1 were with Toyota. Other racing highlights of his career are winning the Macau Grand Prix in 1995, which was also won by his brother, and Formula Nippon Championship in 1996. These days, Ralph is racing in DTM with Mercedes in his also part owner of RSC UK Racing Team in GP3, and I would like to thank him very much for his time, and I must say again that he was very nice and polite to me, which is much appreciated.
Okay, folks, I'm here in Barcelona with Ralf Schumacher. Ralf, thank you for your time so much. How are you today, sir?
Well, I'm great, actually. You know, we had a nice day so far. Beautiful weather, successful qualifying, so I'm happy.
Good. Okay, how much are you enjoying racing in DTM compared to F1?
Well, it's a different kind of racing, but I have to say it's really enjoyable because it's close fighting, you know, a lot of body contact in the car, which is nice for a change. And the racing series itself, you know, people are more relaxed and it's really nice to be there.
Okay. After many years in single-seaters, what was the biggest adjustment you had to make in tin tops?
Well, it's just driving the weight, the heavy weight car with less aero. Braking was a big problem, and obviously less power. So you had to drive more round again. Driving style like a Formula 3, and that I had to adapt to.
Okay. Before deciding on DTM, was there any interest in IndyCars or some other Formula 1 team?
No, not really, because IndyCar, to be honest, oval racing, I think, is not good for me. I tried it in one corner of an oval and I crashed twice, so that's enough for my life. And, well, Formula 1, you know, when I stopped with Toyota, I just didn't want to continue in Formula 1 because there was no real team, good team available for me, so it was better to stop.
Okay. Talking of Indy, the track was not kind to you. As you said, you had two crashes. Apart from that, what was your impression of the track and also of American racing fans?
I was really surprised. We were well received. A lot of fans, you know, real nice atmosphere to race there. The city is great when it's packed with all the motorsport people. I mean, there's so much going on. I've really enjoyed the races there, I have to say.
Do you remember when you were doing this, like, interview with all the fans, one fans asked you, what lap are you planning on crashing this time?
Well, I can't remember, but I managed to crash at the same spot. Yeah, I know.
Okay. Very impressive win over your brother in Canada in your Williams days. What races in F1 and outside F1 are your best memories? They don't have to be necessarily wins.
Well, you know, to be honest, I think we together so far, I mean, Michael, again now, we had a great time in Formula 1, and it was really a pleasure to run around in the world. I think there's no special memory. The best, I would say, was the first win because it took a while, but apart from that, I mean, just being in Formula 1 was great.
Okay, one win that was basically taken away from me was the rain race in Belgium and Jordan. How upset were you when you were told not to win the race?
Well, I have to say, today I understand the decision as team principal, but at the time I was really, upset about the decision. Didn't talk to Eddie for, I think, at least a week, Eddie Jordan, who took the decision, our team boss at the time. But still, it was a very successful race for us, and the conditions were very difficult. I would have been a lot quicker, but obviously I wasn't allowed to.
Okay. Going back to karting days in Kirpin, did you ask for racing tips from Michael when you guys were young? Or did you learn the racecraft on your own?
Well, I think, we are 6.5 years, you know, different in age. And Michael and he tried to teach me in the early days, but younger brothers never listen, I guess. So I did pretty much everything on my own. Obviously, trying always to do it better than the bigger one in karting days, but I think that's normal between brothers.
Now, with his success in Formula 1 while you were coming through the system, was that a big help in opening doors for you?
Well, to one extent, yes, it enabled me to maybe, you know, have contacts and possibilities that you normally wouldn't have. On the other hand, the focus was on me always. Expectations were very high, and people just, you know, didn't take, you know, made mistakes. It was always a big thing. So it helped, but it was a big problem sometimes too.
When you said great expectations, did that bother you?
No, not really, but it's just, you know, was the problem was they always keep watching me on all every details, and as soon as I made a mistake, it was just a big problem. Whereas if you come from nowhere, no name, and you simply do a good job, you know, everybody says you're perfect.
Now, in last several years, Kimi Raikkonen doesn't say anything with the press, so he has no problem, and you would express your opinion. You had, if I may use the word, love-hate relationship with the media. When you look back, what do you think of racing journalists?
Well, I think life could have been a lot easier for all of us, but the problem is, in the spot we are so much pressure, so much is going on, and at one stage, you know, especially as a Formula One driver, you start to get fed up with everything, and you just want to concentrate on your job. And then they try, you know, media a lot of times interferes with not only your job, with private stuff and so on. And the problem is not the media in general, it's just a few journalists that just don't know where the limits are. Looking back, life could have been a lot easier.
For both sides?
Yes.
Okay. You are now team owner in GP3. How involved are you in management of the team, driver coaching, and selection?
Well, first of all, yes, drivers decided by the team principals only. In the young teams, or let's say in the young racing series, you look out, you know, and you hope you find the right one, or you bet on the right horse, basically. That's one thing. Organization point of view, we have a strong team management here. Obviously, on the race weekend, you know, all the political stuff with the organization and so on, yes, I'm involved. And speaking with the drivers, having sometimes look through the data when we go for strategies, what to do at what time, I think I got some experience to help, yeah.
Okay. I won't have access to your brother, but let me ask you a question, if you don't mind me asking and sharing. Have you spoken to him, or has he said to you how he finds Formula One car now as compared to when he left?
Well, he said to me that he finds them easier to drive than they used to be. His car, I mean, he had some understanding which he doesn't like. Here this weekend they changed the car and it looks a lot better for him. And he's really happy to be back. He enjoys it.
Yeah, racing fans like myself, we are loving it. Yeah. Okay, thinking of team owners, was Eddie Jordan the most colorful team owner you ever had?
Yeah. I have to say, Eddie is a good friend of mine, and still, and not a lot of people. Well, Eddie is the kind of guy that is, yes, you're right, he can shout, he's a very loud person, but he's a great guy, you know, to work with, and you can have a lot of fun with him. And I have to say, with the possibilities he had, he made a great job in Formula One.
Yeah. You know, I was talking to one of your ex-engineers, Jackie Eckelhart, and he told me about Eddie Jordan, that the F word, F-bomb, comes out programmed every few minutes. Was that your experience with him also?
Oh yes, it was my experience. He's Irish, for one thing, and for me, when I started from the one, my English, it's still not okay, but it's okay, it's not perfect, but my English was quite poor. So I got really used to swearing within the team, and I didn't know that, you know, you shouldn't do that in front of the English television. And there was that story where I got asked after the race from the BBC, you know, how was your race? And I said, well, we simply fucked up. And yeah, geez, it was during the day. And, you know, they got, I think, like 3 million emails or whatever, you know, complaining in the, during the day. And I thought, you know, can't be that bad because Eddie is doing it any minute. So, it was, but yeah, he's a nice guy.
Okay, what is your favorite track in the world?
For me, it was always Japan, Suzuka.
You race in Japan, right? How was the racing experience there and the cultural differences? Did you enjoy living there?
Well, at the time, I must lie, as I said, because I was quite young. I was only 18, 19. And to go there was a big step because I went there by myself, stayed there for 14, 15 months. Luckily, I won in the first year, the championship. Looking back, it was very important for me because there, you know, it was just a number, more or less, and could calm down and concentrate on racing. And I have to say, Japan race drivers are so competitive, or Japanese race drivers are so competitive in Japan, it's impressive, and I learned a lot over there.
Now, you were also at one time under management by Willy Weber, and then you split. Would you mind sharing what was the reason for that?
Well, it was simply one thing, that I, in a way, grew up, and I thought, you know, I wanted to handle things by myself. And Willie concentrated a lot on Michael, then he had some new drivers, and you know, we're still more or less friends, but I thought it was time for me to move on.
Okay. Now, among the teams you have driven for, Williams is one of them, and again, I'm saying as a racing fan, I read in the press, which always is not correct, I always hear that Patrick Head is a real, real strong-headed knucklehead. What's your experience?
Well, to work with Patrick, it was something very special in my career. But he is a very fair person. He is strong-minded, very strongly minded. He's a tough guy, but at the same time, you know, if he does a mistake, he comes back to you. You might shout sometimes or so, but at the same time, you can shout on him, and it's all fine. I mean, I really, On the professional point of view, I enjoyed working with him, and even private. I mean, to go out and have a nice dinner with Patrick is the best you can have.
And among Formula One drivers, who are still your friends that you stay in contact with?
A little bit with David Coulthard, but actually I've never really forced any friendships to another Formula One driver. So only my brother then, I guess.
Okay. Yeah, good company. And last question is, how old is your son, David, and when can we expect DS in single-seaters?
Well, David will become 9 in October. He's doing karting. It's called Bambini. It's the smallest series. He just started racing. We'll see. I mean, I hope he does something proper, but at the moment, he enjoys motorsport. As long as he does, I support it.
Danke schön.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. All the best.
Ralf Schumacher, thanks for joining F1Weekly.com.
Okay, welcome back to F1Weekly.com. We're going to go into these introductions with Nasser about these two great race car interviews. But real quickly, I want to tell everybody, Dale Earnhardt's race suit is still missing, ladies and gentlemen. And of course, everyone in Texas is turning every stone to find it. So now to Nasser. Welcome back to the studios, Nasser. How are you?
Clark, Alex is the youngest son of Dan Gurney, one of the greatest names in motor racing.
Absolutely.
Also a very likable person, always with a smile. And Alex, I'll tell you what, if you see a picture of Dan Gurney from the late 50s when he had just gone to Europe, or early 60s, Alex is a carbon copy of his dad. Tall, has the same smile, and, you know, most importantly, also has that very nice
disposition.
Personality, you know. Yeah. You know, it's somebody you want to talk to, you know. It's not
very
like
approachable.
Very approachable, very likable. And interestingly enough, you know, despite the fact that racing, he was born in racing, you know, he did not get into racing till he was in college. He went to University of Colorado at Boulder. And then when he was in college, he did some racing. He started out with Skip Barber Formula Dodge Midwest Championship, where he recorded 10 wins out of 14 races and was Rookie of the Year. So this is, you know, pretty decent start. And over the years, he has raced in different series. He was racing in Formula Atlantic. His dad's team was running the show. And one year, I remember, they had painted the car same as Dan Gurney's Eagle, which would look very cool in the same paint scheme as the late 60s Formula One car. And then, as we had talked to him at this interview, took place at Sears Point when he was competing at the Grand Am Series. Rolex Grand Am, I think they call
something
it.
Something like that, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and pretty hot day, if you remember.
It was.
And we talked to him about racing in Europe. He raced in the ultra-competitive British mm-hmm. Formula 3 Championship. So now he's pretty much a full-time driver in the, sports car series. And I would like to see him, you know, maybe do Le Mans or do some other, especially.
He's still young.
He's still young. He was actually born in September 1975. And resides, you know, where the family lives, Newport Beach, California. So it'll be very nice to see him if he can ever take part in the Indy 500. You know, Dan's team won the race a few times. And also if he can do some races overseas, especially the Le Mans. It'll be very nice to see the Gurney name and the Gurney smile back on, you know, major international competition.
Absolutely.
So let's listen to him and see what he has to say.
Now, Alex Gurney talking to F1Weekly.com.
Alex, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Excellent.
Racing is in your blood, as we all know. How much is your father helping and guiding your career? Well, he's helped quite a bit, just mostly on the driving side of things, not so much where to go and how to go about it, but really the driving and the technical side, he's really helped me quite a bit. So he's always there every day. Actually, still, he watches every session on the computer, and he always has some advice for me, and we talk about just the changes that we make on the car all the time. He's really interested in that.
You raced in British Formula 3. How was that experience, and can you sort of elaborate on that experience?
Yeah, it was awful. Was with the probably the wrong team in the wrong year, and a couple things. You know, we were one of the only teams running a Renault, which wasn't really the engine to have that year with, you know, maybe 18 or so Hondas that were stout. Also, I really didn't get along with my engineer. So, really, it wasn't very good. I mean, every track we'd go to, you know, I'd be 4/10 off, something like that. And then you know, obviously it was super competitive, so that would be worth 15th or something like that.
So it was frustrating beyond belief, and I really wish I would have gotten a second go at it. So anyways, it was frustrating, but I learned a lot. Learned a lot technically, and the driving over there, you know, it was all super competitive, and it was good for me. But had a couple good showings at the end, but other than that, it's garbage.
A lot of Americans think you would be a great ambassador for the A1 Grand Prix Series. Yeah. Have you considered it? Have you talked to them at all?
I have talked to them a little bit. There's still a chance of that in the future. I don't know. We'll see. But I have had a couple discussions. So
very good. That gives us some hope. Any Indy 500s in your future?
I don't see it in the future. No. I love road racing, and it's one of the things I love about this series. We race only on road courses, and you know, get to race against all some of the best drivers in the world, and in equipment where we can all race hard and race close. So. It's really the perfect situation for a driver, I think.
Terrific. And what are your long-term career goals? Are you going to stick with this program? What do you have going on in the future?
Right now, I'm going to stick with this program. You know, Bob Stallings, who runs the ship here at the Gainsco team, is a really special guy, and he's kind of taking care of me in a lot of ways. And I don't know. We've built this team together, and it's really... it seems to be paying off, and I don't know. We're just happy we're here in Grand Am in a competitive situation, and we'll see where it goes. Everyone in the paddock, you know, because of the NASCAR affiliation, we're all hoping that Grand Am takes off like some of the other NASCAR series have taken off. So we're hoping for that.
Yeah, if you could just get a chunk of that would be terrific. And for all our Formula One fans at F1 Weekly, can you tell us how your dad's doing?
He's doing very well. Still riding his motorcycles every Sunday, and of course watches all the F1 races. But still as competitive as ever, I would say.
Fernando or Michael Schumacher in the World Championship?
It's getting close, isn't it? I'm going to go with
South German. He might say Schumacher.
I'll go with Alonso.
Very good. And how's your car doing today? How's the setup? Any brake problems?
No, we were quickest in the warm-up with actually a decent gap, so things look good.
Alex, thanks for talking to F1Weekly.com. We really appreciate it.
All right, thank you very much.
Clark, question for you. Was Milka the most attractive race car driver you ever interviewed?
Absolutely. Stunning. She's very intelligent, 4 master's degrees, but she's absolutely gorgeous.
She is, and also very approachable, very likable.
Very nice. No problem doing the interview. I mean, I was smitten.
Wow. And she was the kitten.
Exactly.
Did you see racing in her eyes?
Oh, I saw lots of racing in her eyes, and I have to say I saw a few other things too.
Like some hot laps.
Exactly. So, yeah, introduce us to Milka Duno, a fantastic woman who's accomplished a great deal.
Yeah, she is, you know, good-looking and very... doing a pretty decent job in the cutthroat world of manly motor racing. And she is from Venezuela and was the Venezuelan Auto Racing Driver of the Year in 2000. And, you know, there was a big motorcycle racer from Venezuela, Johnny Chicardo, who raced in Formula One also. And his son is now coming through the ranks. And there's another guy named Ernesto Viso who's making a pretty decent name for himself. So, you know, that is a country that has not produced the Senas and the Piquets or the Fangios, but it's good to see, you know, more countries being represented. And who could be a better rep for your country than Miss Senorita Duno? And she began, like most people in South America, in small club racing in 1996-97, finishing second in the Venezuelan GT Championship. And then in 1998, she moved to the United States to compete in the Barber Dodge Series. And some years ago, I was at Laguna Seca, and I met a gentleman who was hanging around the Milka Duno team. And I asked him what his name was. And he won't believe what he said. He said, "I'm Vic Elford." And you know who that is.
Of course.
Very famous sports car race driver from England. And he was... he may still be her driving coach. So she's surrounded by pretty good people. There's a big sponsorship for her from Citgo, which is the state-owned Venezuelan company. She has also raced in Formula Nissan in Spain, also raced at Le Mans.
Open Wheel Series in Spain and Le Mans. She's done Le Mans a couple of times.
Yeah. And Formula Nissan is the same series where Alonso got his teeth.
Correct, correct. It's a very, very big series in Europe in terms of open wheels.
Yeah, actually it has now formed into, you know, flowed over into Formula Renault. Because Nissan has a big stake.
Exactly.
Renault has a big stake in Nissan. So she has raced all over the world, Le Mans, American Sports Car Series, Open Wheel Series. I am very surprised that she has not been at Indy, you know, especially with the hoopla surrounding Danica Patrick and previously Sarah Fisher. So we'll see what happens. Again, this interview was also conducted at Sears Point when she, like Alex Gurney, was competing at the Rolex Grand Am Championship. And I think her plan is to stay in the series next year also. But we'll keep an eye on all these, you know, people we are interviewing, especially the young ones, and report on their progress as they move up the food
chain.
Exactly.
And that's the philosophy at F1 Weekly. If there's a race car driver that has fantastic charisma and has accomplished a lot, like Milka Duno, she's on.
Yeah, we will report even though this is not Formula One. But we want, you know, a lot of people are interested in knowing at least what's going on apart from Formula One. And, you know, talking of young people, we interviewed this gentleman, young kid from Sausalito, J.R. Hildebrand.
Exactly.
He has just been announced as a driver in the Formula Atlantic Series. So I do expect him to go into Champ Cars or whatever the name of the series is in the next at least 2 years.
Yeah. And that's our lucky break. We catch these young people, and then they get the big break, and they can thank us.
Yeah, and then they will, you know, when they want to talk to media, they'll say, you know, let's call that, you know, funky French guy.
Very good. Thank you very much, Nasser. And now, Milka Duno.
Okay. Milka first, how are you today?
Very good, thank you.
How's your car doing on the Sonoma racetrack here?
Every session is going better and better and better. I think we have a good car for the race.
When you were racing in the Telefonica series in España, what are your most memorable moments?
Oh, I remember my fifth place in Austria, in Germany. Also the fifth place in Valencia, Spain, no? But it was very tough championship. Even when you say fixed place, no, fixed place was very tough arriving the fixed place. And I was the only woman that get points in the championship, only the top eight, something like that, get points. And I was the only one in 3 years, in every year, get points.
Who did you look up to when you were growing up as a young driver?
When you know, I am naval engineer. I never thought that I would be a race car driver. And I was a story all the time. I have a lot of focus in my career like engineer. I did some master's degree. I was concentrated only in my career. And after, everything changed. And now I am a race car driver. It's unusual, huh?
How popular is motorsports racing in Venezuela?
In Venezuela, like I think in every place of the world, many people follow this sport, no? But not every country have the facility that we have here or that we have in Europe, no? And this is when you want to grow in this career, you need to go to the country that have the facility or the championships for participate.
What do you enjoy most, sports car racing or single-seaters?
I enjoy both, but if you let me choose, I want single-seater again.
Now a question about Le Mans. How is it going down the Mulsanne Strait at night?
You know, in Le Mans, it's a gray, and the things that I most enjoy in Le Mans is when I am driving about 5 in the morning, because when you start driving, it's night, and after every light is more clear, and after you see the sun, and you have so much energy again, and you can continue driving for 24 hours more.
One more question. Michael Schumacher or Fernando Alonso for the World Championship?
Michael Schumacher is my favorite one.
Fantastic.
I'm going with him. This is my favorite driver.
Yeah, I have a question for you. Johnny Cecotto was a very famous motorcyclist and race car driver from your country. Do you know him personally?
Oh, yes, I know Johnny Cecotto, and he also is one of my favorite because he is the guy from Venezuela that arrived at the highest level in racing. It's something that I say, so nice, like Johnny Cecotto. Yes.
I remember when he came into Europe, he was very young, like 17 or 18.
Yes, and he was a good champion, everything, and he was a very good driver.
Is he back in Venezuela these days, and what is he doing?
I think he's in Germany, I think, but I'm not sure.
DTM, probably. DTM?
I don't know. I think he drove in DTM. He was champion also, I think, in some championship in Germany, in Europe. I am not sure if he's in sim racing now. I am not sure.
And there's also...
His son that is starting racing now, and he's followed the career of his son.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And you also have, from your country, Ernesto Viso. I believe he's in GP2 these days.
Uh-huh.
Do you know him?
Yes, I know a few guys that is in racing in Europe. Yeah.
And is there any support for motor racing from, like, you know, a lot of countries support their own drivers, government, or semi-government agencies? Is there any support from Venezuelan motorsport authorities for Venezuelan drivers?
We have a very good support now in general in all the sports, because the Esport Institute is getting the support to many athletics now, and this is good and very different category, you know, you see in volleyball, in football, in motor racing, everywhere.
What's your favorite track in Europe?
In Europe, I like Monza, but I like also Austria.
And what's your favorite track here in the United States?
In United States, I have many favorites. I like Daytona. I like Homestead because I won in Homestead. But I like also Road Atlanta because the most podium that I have is in Atlanta, in Road Atlanta.
And when you race here in the United States, where are you based?
In Miami.
Is from Miami.
Everybody live in Miami with a good sunshine, very nice weather. You see the water.
And with Juan Pablo and Montoya there is always.
Everybody live in Miami.
Thank you very much for talking to F1Weekly.com. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Milka, thank you so much for joining F1Weekly.com. I really did appreciate speaking with you.
And the racing in your eyes is just wonderful. Es muy bueno.
Muy bueno, caliente. I want to thank everyone that has helped make F1 Weekly possible. I want to thank Nasser, Steve Faub, David Tapia, and Nasser, real quickly, he's got a quick tidbit. The news just came off the ticker tape.
I would like to request our listeners to please listen to the interview we just posted with Francois Castaigne. He was the gentleman who convinced the Renault board in the 70s to go into Formula One with a turbocharged engine.
That's true.
Which he designed.
That's
and
true.
And it's a great, great piece of conversation about racing history. And it's on podcast number
114. And I concur with Nasser. When somebody says they started their career in mechanical engineering at Gordini, flags should just fly and you should perk up your ears, because that is great history, great Formula One history, great racing history. And you start at Gordini, you work on the Renault Alpines at Le Mans, then you wind up in Formula One designing one of the most famous V6 turbos and winning the 1979.
He's on! He's off! He's on!
He's off! He's off! He's back again! It's incredible! So yes, that interview with Francois Castaigne is absolutely outstanding. And once again, I want to thank Francois for making it possible.
And now let's go right to the wrap-up with the forum updates.
This week's forum update from our good friend Yay. This week in the forums, they said happy birthday to the host, Mr. Rogers.
Okay, thank you very much. I want to thank all the listeners that make us possible, that make us real. Good night.
Good night.
Bye-bye.
Hi, I'm Felipe Massa. You are listening to F1 Weekly.
How far is the moon from the Earth?
Interested in trivia? Please tune in to my Trivia Podcast, a weekly podcast rarely more than 8 minutes in duration, with 10 or more questions and answers to fun facts about topics such as science, geography, history, and there's even some audio thrown in. You can find my Trivia Podcast in iTunes, Podcast Alley, and other podcast sites, or you can go to www.mytriviapodcast.com. Hope to have you tuning in.
The moon is 250,000 miles away. The capital...
This is Desiree for F1Weekly.com, thanking you, the subscribers and members of our listening audience, for listening to our podcast, reporting and commenting on Formula One, the highest echelon of motorsport, a blend of technology, tradition, glamour, and guts, all wrapped up in a high-speed package. That's F1Weekly.com for all your Formula One needs.